You're listening to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I, of course, am Scott McNulty, and I am joined by Mr. Jason Snell, who's back. With a vengeance. Hello, Jason.
With a vengeance. I'll get you, Scott. At last, I've thrown David Lohr back off the show, and it's me again. I'm dedicated and devoted to new Star Trek, just as you are, of course. So it's good to be back.
And of course, we're going to talk about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Episode 7, Season 1. I don't know why I said it that way. The Serene Squall.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to the Quiet Storm here, as we like to call the Serene Squall.
That's right.
Easy listening rock hits of the 70s and today.
Oh,
something like that about the Serene Squall. It sounds like the Quiet Storm. It's an FM radio station is what I'm saying. I think, Scott, the Serene Squall as an episode title may refer to the pirate ship, the Serene Squall, that is in this episode.
Seems unlikely, but I'll go with you this time. And apparently, I'm looking at the Memory Alpha page for this episode, and this is the 850th episode of 850 Star Trek episodes.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go, Serene Squall. You did it.
You did it. We'll be on to 1,000 in probably like a month or something, right? The rate they're releasing these Star Trek shows.
It's dizzying.
There's a lot.
There is a lot. But let's talk about our latest heap and helping of Star Trek. We've got, you know, all kinds of things happening in here, but we'll continue our tradition of just talking about our general feelings about this episode before we talk about particular things. So, Jason, what did you think of the Serene Squall?
Scott, I loved it. I loved it. I think this is my favorite episode of the season. Even more than Spock Amok. I loved it because it is doing everything that I think Strange New Worlds has been trying to do, which is it's trying to give us some character stuff that's rich, the richness of the characters and seeing where they're going. And they said all along they were going to be serializing the characters, but not the plots. And that is mostly true. So this is a good Spock episode. It's a good Chapel episode. And the A-plot really is about Spock and Chapel and a guest star played by Jesse James Keitel as Dr. Aspen. And they're doing things on the Enterprise. And then the B-plot is a wacky Captain Pike and Number One and a bunch of other people on a space pirate ship having kind of a ridiculous series of interactions with space pirates. And I know there are going to be people out there who are very going to be like Sam the Eagle and being like, this is very serious business, Star Trek. You should take this seriously. It's like, I felt like the tone of the space pirate stuff on the pirate ship was so well done in that it was very clearly such a light touch that it was such a quirky comedy tone that you just gotta go with it, right? You gotta go with it and laugh at them doing their whole thing, like, hey, let's do that thing where we get the pirates to mutiny, and they like wink at each other and like, yep, it always works. That old chestnut, let's do it, and then they do it, and of course it works.
And it works for the most part.
So that was really good, while also having some very good character beats, and a nice storyline. So I've got a couple kind of strange quibbles with a couple strange choices they made, but you know, they're always quibbles. I thought this was great. How about you?
I also thought it was great. I was concerned when I saw the teaser for this episode because I thought that it would feature a Tholian web.
Right.
And that angered my Star Trek nerd core. It's in the very heart of me. But it wasn't a Tholian web. It was
laser trap.
It was a laser trap, which I enjoyed. And then I was happy because it is this episode avoids, for the most part, building on characters that we already know, other than the characters that are obviously in the show. So it wasn't like a remake of a particular Star Trek episode that we've already seen before. And then there were a couple of surprises that surprised me. I wasn't expecting Dr. Aspen to not be who they said they were. And I certainly wasn't expecting the very end of this episode, which we'll get to.
We'll get to it at the end. That revelation made me laugh and laugh and laugh. I have not laughed that hard at a Star Trek episode in a long time. So we'll get there. But boy, wow. Wow. Like, wow.
I don't know what to even say about that.
No. I know what to say, Scott. Mm-hmm. This episode of Vulcan Hello is brought to you, as all episodes of the Strange New World run here, by New Mexico Tea Company. Go to strangenewteas.com. And they've got 10 different tea blends that are for the 10 episodes of Strange New Worlds. You can get them. You can get little tasters of all 10. This week's tea is called Love Ascended from Majalis. Love Ascended, and it is... It is like a green tea, and it's got a little toasted rice and some cinnamon and star anise. I had it earlier today. It is, in fact, my Star Trek reaction to it was, it's green. But because it is, it's green tea. Mm-hmm. But it was tasty and fun. And all of these teas have been fun because they all taste different. And that's the idea, is stretch your, even if you're like me and you're mostly drinking black tea or you're mostly drinking green tea or whatever it is, or you're drinking coffee, I don't know. You can sign up and they'll send you the 10 strange new teas. We're getting toward the end of the season, so you'll get a lot of them, I think, at once, and then a few week by week as the season ends. But it's been a fun journey to take with them, and I'm glad that they sponsored this season, and I get all my tea from New Mexico Tea Company, so that is my personal endorsement here. Don't give that to every sponsor, but I do for this. I buy a lot of tea from them. So strangenewteas.com will get you to the page with some Star Trek-inspired teas and some strange new teas that you can check out. So thank you to them.
To them, yes, thank you. And if it's good enough for Jason, it's good enough for you. So what are you waiting for? Go get some.
Honestly, come on.
I'm still not a tea drinker, so I cannot extol their virtues. But
that's fine.
I will say in most recent memory, the last several cups of tea that I've had have been from the New Mexico Tea Company. Nice. So, and I enjoyed them. So
what do you drink, a hot beverage of choice, or do you not?
I will have a hot chocolate every once in a
while. Hot chocolate. And
that's about it.
That's my go-to at Starbucks. Actually, it's a hot chocolate because I don't like coffee. And their tea,
I don't like coffee either.
I do drink a lot of tea, but for the most part, I don't. When I'm going to Starbucks, it's not my first thing in the morning where I'm having tea. So I get a hot chocolate there too.
Well, there you go.
Not a Rocchino.
No, not a Rocchino. I don't know why I don't drink tea. I every time I drink it, I enjoy it, but then I just never think about it. So
all right,
I'm not a hot beverage person. I think
that is probably what we've established here.
This is what the people tune in for. Yeah. To find out next week what I like to eat.
Mm, oh, so the Serene Squall is it's a pirate episode. There's that little like part where they have to solve the problem of the which one of these asteroids is the power source of the laser, and Spock has to use his gut, which is a very TOS kind of thing, right? Like teaching Spock how to use his human side and all that. And so for the first part of this episode, before the reveal, we get Jesse James Keitel as Dr. Aspen. Just to be clear, Dr. Aspen is a non-binary person who uses they, them pronouns. Jesse James Keitel, although trans and non-binary, uses she, her. So we're going to refer to her, the actress, as an actress and as her, but Dr. Aspen is a they. It's a little confusing. It's okay. We'll get there. I thought great bit of casting. Very charismatic actor.
Yes.
A fun Star Trek-y kind of character here. This is like a new person who's very charismatic and has a mission, and they're talking to Spock, and as a great guest star in Star Trek does, kind of prodding one of our characters into. I remember when back in college, when Greg Noss and I wrote a spec script for Next Generation, we had the writer's guide, and one of the key things in the writer's guide is that if you have a guest star, it really needs to be about our characters. So the guest star is bouncing off of the characters and informing you about the people who are on. It's not about them and their progression. It's about how they interact with our characters, and it's perfectly on display here with Dr. Aspen giving Spock his lesson, which of course Angel the Pirate Queen does later, which is that Spock is not, I mean, it's common sense, and yet I think I like how Spock is not thinking this way, because I think it goes to the core of how Spock presents as a Vulcan all the time to everybody. That so when they say to him, you are not a Vulcan, you are not a human, you know, basically I was waiting for them to say, be your Spock, be Spock, find out who Spock is, because that is who you need to be. And I thought that was, I think that's a really good little theme running through this episode, because he's concerned with his relationship with T'Pring, and she's reading dirty books about sex for humans
human
to try and like understand how to tap into his well, yes, she's very logical about it. She's like, I read about human sexuality, and he's like, oh, gross, no, right? Like that's the that's the dynamic.
I enjoyed that part because she's trying her best. She's like, I want to connect to Spock in all his various ways.
I'm doing this for you.
And he's like, gross, don't do that.
Yeah, I mean this is the family-ish friendly version of where she's like, I watched a lot of human porn, and Spock's like, whoa, no, what are you doing, right? But it's like, but I did it for us. And he's like, that's very nice, but don't do that. So it's to have Aspen there doing their thing of like, you know, you got to figure it out for yourself, right? You can't, which is also similar to kind of like the Nurse Chapel advice that she gives him. So it's just, that is, what's a more classic Star Trek character than Spock? And this is the classic dynamic of Spock, is he is of two worlds and of no world, and he has to find his own path.
That's right. And the Spock we meet in the original series is still grappling with these things. And this Spock obviously is younger and still even more grappling with these things than ever before.
Talking about Cullinar, which is not the motion picture reference, not the worst Star Trek movie referenced in this episode.
But well, not like, the worst Star Trek movie referenced in this episode.
It is a really nice thing, because again, we talked about it for our member special about the motion picture and how it is a great thing, because it's like the culmination of Spock's arc as he decides to go through the Cullinar ritual. And so here he says, I'm really looking forward to it, right?
It's gonna be great.
But it is that point where in TMP he basically says, oh, this is not the path I need to walk, like that doing that and purifying myself, I'm gonna become like V'ger. Nobody wants to be like V'ger. It's a crazy machine in a cloud. So I'm not going to do that. And yeah, and so seeing this is part of his progression to that point of this lifelong struggle with his identity. It's great. It's just the best.
And movie Spock is really the Spock who is at one with his Spockness, right? Because he sacrifices himself for friendship in spoilers for Star Trek 2.
Yeah. Dies at the end. Yeah,
he does. It's very sad. Every time I watch it, still sad.
Very sad. I cried my eyes out in the theater when I was 11. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's very sad. And that fake at the beginning where you think, oh, that's because, you know, the rumors. Yeah, he's dead on the... That's not it. Keep watching.
Yeah, don't turn it off after Spock dies in the first 10 seconds of Star Trek 2. It gets better.
If there's no Spock in this, I don't want to watch this. Spock is great. And Ethan Peck continues to be a fantastic portrayal of Spock. Because, you know, it's a high bar, I feel like. And I was watching this episode and he does the eyebrow thing and he does it perfectly. And it's just like, and we've said this before, he's not doing his Leonard Nimoy impersonation, but he is doing his characterization of Spock.
Yes.
And I think it's bang on.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Yep. It's all very good. I like the Spock Chapel relationship, you know, which is defined in a couple of classic Star Trek episodes, especially I think The Naked Time and
Watch Out for That Soup
and Amok Time, obviously. Mm-hmm. Well, in Naked Time she professes her love, and Amok Time he throws the soup against the wall. And so to have Chapel here, Jess Bush, by the way, so great. Such a fun character. She's on the Ready Room this week talking to Will Wheaton with her Australian accent, which is hilarious to hear. She has a good American accent. But, you know, she tiptoes around it. Will Wheaton less so when he says basically, we don't know anything about Chapel. We like Chapel, but all we really know is that she has a crush on Spock. And it's true. Like, Chapel is competent, but what do we really know about her? And that allows Jess Bush to try and, you know, kind of really paint a much more broader modern picture of who this person is, and so we get a little sense from their conversations and Oh, by the way, she also like hypos a couple of guys.
More than a couple, several guys.
Several guys, knocks them out. It's great. But then she has that moment where she and Spock kiss on the bridge as part of their subterfuge.
Dear. And
that is one of those things where, you know, the show is playing with canon, but in a really interesting way, which is sort of like you can see all of the roots of how Christine Chapel has her feelings for Spock, and also how she knows that it is doomed and that she needs to kind of just move on and not think about it and push it down. And I like all of that. And to Pring we get too, right? Who's
yeah,
still
to Pring.
You know, we know where that relationship is going. I think we see Ston in this episode, right?
Oh, like, yes.
Like, so, you know, we know where this is going, but
it's not gonna end well.
But the way I feel like the way it's going to go is not that she's a villain, as we've said before, but that she comes to realize just how committed to Starfleet Spock is, and it's not the life she wants.
Right. I mean, she is. It is apparent why. As a character, Spock is interested in T'Pring, right? Because she is her job and seemingly way of life is to help Vulcans, wayward Vulcans, come back to the fold and be, you know, as re-Vulcanized, basically, Vulcans. And what Spock wants more than anything is to be a Vulcan. And he tries to be much like Worf, right? He wants to be the best Vulcan he can be, and that's his constant struggle. And so he thinks, well, of course, the most Vulcan-y thing to do would be to fall in love with this person who re-Vulcanizes people, and you can just see that they care for each other, but it is doomed. Well, we obviously know this, but because of their different viewpoints, like she's trying to understand Spock, and the thing that interests her about Spock is his dual nature, and the thing that Spock hates about himself is his dual nature.
Yeah, I think there is a self-loathing that the original series didn't really talk about it, right? Because I think the original series made him half human because it was interesting to like give him an angle for like, aha, you're not a complete alien, you're also kind of us. But and then we meet his parents and there's that whole thing. But here, like when you think about Spock, he really is about denying part of who he is, right? Like he doesn't. When we meet other Vulcans, they're not like, whoa, they're totally different from Spock. It's like, no, they're like Spock. They're all modeled on Spock. And I know that's partially just because the character is so indelible that everybody's trying to do their riff on Leonard Nimoy's Spock. But that shows you Spock is not half and half. Like Spock, at least TOS Spock especially, right? He's really leaned into the Vulcan side of it and is suppressing part of his personality and kind of in denial, which is, I would say also thematically, especially given Jesse James Keitel being in this episode and it being Pride Month, to say that one of the things that Spock was an icon for a lot of people in the LGBTQ community. And I think one of the reasons is that Spock struggles with his identity and who he is, and he doesn't feel like he's part of the human world or the Vulcan world. And I think that has resonance for lots of outcast people beyond that community as well, but definitely in that community. So to see it all explored here, it's so rich. And you'd think, oh, Spock, haven't we done it all with Spock? And the answer is no.
No, we have not. There are whole tracks of Spock that we know nothing about.
Really? Including his family, but we'll get there.
Oh, boy. Spock has so much family. He is a very large family. It is true. But we'll get there. People who are listening to this have to have watched the episode, so they know what we're hinting at, so it's not going to be a surprise. But I know
once we open that can, we're never going to be able to close it again, so I want to save it for the end.
Yes. And so that's the Spock stuff. I think I will also say, I did not expect Dr. Aspen to be revealed as the pirate captain. I was like, oh, this Orion guy is clearly the captain, although not for long, because Captain Pike is going to start a mutiny.
We got to talk about that, yeah.
So they fooled me. Good on you, episode.
Here's my problem with it is, Dr. Aspen says very clearly that the Serene Squall is this pirate ship that's attacking everybody. And then when they get to the ship, Dr. Aspen does not say anything about it being the Serene Squall. And when the when the away team goes over and is immediately captured by pirates, and the big Remy pirate basically says, "Ha ha! This is the Serene Squall." And that was the moment where I went, "Oh, she's bad," because she would have said, "That's the Serene Squall," and they would not have said that. They did not say that. Which means that they're in on it. And I didn't know that Dr. Aspen would be the captain of the pirate ship, but it was clear to me at that point that it was fishy. So when the moment comes that Spock unlocks the things, I'm like, well, you just gave it to them, whoever they are. You just gave it to them. So I spotted that one. I'm in my headcanon, Pike also figured that out at that moment, and maybe just assumed that this guy was the captain, but that I think figured out this whole thing was a trap and that Aspen was in on it, because they don't have any communication at that point, so he can't radio back about it. But so I was not taken in by the twist, because and it would have been solved if Remy had not said, "You're on the Serene Squall." Ha ha ha. It could have been a little bit less but I guess, reasonable people could miss that little point that, like, why would Dr. Aspen not say something if they knew about the Serene Squall? But that's because it was a double cross.
See, I'm a reasonable person. I didn't notice that. But I will say...
I take back my criticism now, because I think it's there if you pay attention to that very specifically, yes. But it's very easy to miss it.
And I was mainly thinking, when the reveal happened, lamenting the poor Starfleet security once again.
Oh, yeah.
They're just like Dr. Aspen. Aspen. I was going to say Dr. Angel, but that's the
nope.
other name.
Nope, not a doctor.
Not a doctor. Captain Angel, Dr. Aspen. Just kind of shows up and everyone's like, okay, I guess you're Dr. Aspen.
Yeah.
There's no way for us to confirm who you are. I guess we won't bother. Let's go.
No, but again, I'm going to headcanon that in and say that pirates have ways of faking. Like, if our people can fake their IDs and stuff, so can pirates. So I'll go along with that.
It was a minor quibble. I chuckled to myself. And then I also chuckled when they Spock gave his command authorization codes, and it was like three things. And I was like, oh, still.
Yeah, I mean, there's like scanning and biometrics and stuff going on there too. But yeah, you're right. Although I do like that the last laugh is that at the end, when the Serene Squall comes to save the day with Captain Pike at the till, like literally at a spinning wheel that he is steering.
Which is great.
Amazing. Again, does it make sense? Who cares? It's a pirate ship. It's great. So they use they didn't say prefix codes. They said something else, but like literally like
backdoor
codes or something. It is the backdoor. Yes, the backdoor codes that literally they can take control of the Enterprise remotely. So Starfleet's bad security is also good security, Scott.
It's true. It is true. And I enjoyed the wheel on the bridge, and I also enjoyed Captain Pike, his being very sure of himself, and he talks Captain Angel down, and he says you surrender, and she transports off, or they is Captain Angel. I don't know what.
That's unclear. Captain like Angel's did Angel are, but... did Angel target a non-binary person to impersonate? Or is, I think we'll just have to wait until Captain Angel returns.
Returns.
Who will obviously return.
Yes. I'll assume they, because that can apply to anybody. So they beam off, and then you're like, oh, well, Captain Pike, they have the Serene Squall under control. And number one is like, could you hurry up? The mutiny is still in progress.
Yeah, that was such a great, again, just basically a joke, but a really good joke, right? Which is like, yeah, we didn't actually, like, they're close in on Pike, and it's like, haha, I've got everything under control. And then the last shot is they're pulled back, and it's like, oh no, it's not under control. The mutiny is still happening.
Yes, things are going
poorly. You should beam us out of here, because there's a mutiny happening, and... that was really, I love all of that stuff. I think Anson Mount is so great, and he's so great at comedy. I think the idea that Pike talks the guy into cooking, it's like, your cooking is bad. He's like, what do you mean? My cooking is fine. Everybody likes it.
And everybody loves
like,
it.
And he's like, what? And so Pike's like, I'll cook for you. It's fine. I'm going to make beans. Do you like beans? Beans are better than oatmeal,
beans.
Right?
And I thought, I wasn't sure how wacky they were going to make that pirate section until I saw Pike with an apron on.
Yeah.
Cooking his beans, and I thought, okay, they're going full wacky over here.
They do have to eat, but so like I was like, wow, this is quite a nice kitchen here in the pirate ship. But they do have to eat; it's a thing that they have to do. I like the character that he talks to, and he's like, "This guy sucks. You should take over," which is pretty. It's pretty great. I mean, it's so transparent, and that's why number one is like, "Are we really doing this?" And he's like, "Yeah, it totally works. Let's do it." He's almost gleeful, right? And like, we get to do this, and it's I just thought it was really funny. It's a light. It's the B plot. It's just silly.
He's like, good news, everybody. I convinced him to sell us to the Klingons.
And obviously, Captain Angel feels about their crew like we do, which is they suck. Because at the end, Captain Angel's like, see you later, suckers. And they all are still there. And they just beam out and are gone.
They beam out and take their little escape ship to try to rescue their husband,
also,
which I guess...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Also, their husband, who we have to talk about, but one other note, which is, I'm not entirely sure, but it looked to me, at least, like maybe one of those pirates is a Reeman.
Oh,
which
yes,
of course is the worst Star Trek movie referenced. No, it's not.
No,
it's still not. It's still not. But Star Trek Nemesis, because there's that guy who's got the ears and is bald, and I don't know. He looks like a Reeman. If he's not a Reeman, he should be a Reeman, and it would be fine because nobody's seen the Romulans. But you know, nobody knows what the Reemans. That's fine.
That's right. We didn't know what the Reemans were until Star Trek Nemesis.
Star Trek Nemesis, one of the three worst Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm. So. Uh-huh. Should we pivot to the big reveal at the end, which I only saw coming because I read a spoiler, so I knew that it was coming. But even knowing, it was still a surprise because I was like, I don't know.
I was completely surprised by it. Yeah. So first off, so Captain Angel is trying to get their husband back, and he's a Vulcan, which explains why they have been doing the psychoanalysis of Spock all along.
Sure.
The Vulcan has a name that we don't know. And Spock says something like, I think I knew who that is. Right. Which is like weird. It's like, well, what does that mean? And at the end of the episode, and T'Pring is working with him on this, you know, prison / rehabilitation colony. It was so very Vulcan to Angel's like, it's a prison. And T'Pring's like, no, it's not. It's a minimum security it's friendly place where people go.
It's a re-education camp.
Yeah. Oh no, that's worse. It's a park. It's a park with Vulcans in it. And they live there and they can't leave, but it's fine. It's just fine. That's what we call it. So Spock has that moment where he's like, one of T'Pring's prisoners, a criminal against logic, has this pseudonym. I think I know who this is. And at the end of the episode, in dramatic fashion, he says, my father had a secret wife before my mother, and they had a baby, and his name was Cybok. Ah! And they show the back of the head on the prison planet, Vulcan prison park, of Cybok.
A very Cybokian.
Yes.
Back of the head.
He's just kind of hairy. And it's the villain from Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, who is Spock's half-brother, the Vulcan rebel Cybok. Mm-hmm. I laughed, Scott. I laughed so much that they went there. And I love it because I think Star Trek V is a bad movie, but this is it's canon. And bring it on. Like, bring it on. Yes. Let's talk about Cybok. Let's do it.
Figure out what's going on with that Cybok.
Let's do it. Let's define this more, because right now it's sort of like nobody knows about Spock's half brother who's a rebel against logic until Star Trek V happens. And surely there were other issues before then, right? And so it's like, yes, there were. Here we are. And we only see his back. So that, like, obviously this is going to be a recurring element. Yeah, yeah.
I would be very upset if we never hear from Cybok again.
And presumably Captain Angel, too, right? Like, clearly Captain Angel, who literally in a grand sci-fi tradition presses a button on their necklace and disappears to live another day, right? Like, it is like, I'll be back. They might as well say at that moment. And then you have the Cybok reveal, and it's like, well, definitely if he's their husband, then yeah, that we'll be seeing both of them
they'll
again.
They'll be back.
They'll both be back.
Everyone will be back. Yes. And I will say, so Star Trek V, not a good movie.
Not a good movie.
Not a good Star Trek movie.
Nope.
One of the best things in that movie, though, is the scene where we meet Cybok for the first time and he laughs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that is
Lawrence,
so weird.
Lawrence Luckenbill is not really the problem with Star Trek V. This is not a podcast about Star Trek V. It is an interesting idea, right? Because it is, we talk about how rich it is to talk about Spock and Spock's history. Cybok, the whole point there is that he is the opposition to Spock. He's the full Vulcan who has completely repudiated logic and embraced emotion, whereas Spock is a half-human being who has tried to integrate himself but still follows Vulcan ways. It's an interesting idea in a movie that isn't very good. So you could like repudiate it and be like, no, that never happened. But like, it totally did. They counted up the Star Trek movies and that was the fifth one. And then they made a sixth one. Do you like Star Trek VI? Well, do you call it Star Trek V? You don't, because there already was one. Therefore it exists. Therefore we have to talk about Cybok.
They didn't have to talk about it.
Well, okay, you're right. In fact, that's what I love about it is they totally could have pretended that never happened. And Stranger Worlds is like, nope. Any stone that is not unturned in Spock's history, we are going to turn over. That is what we're here to do. And bless him for it. Like, I just love the audacity of it. Just like, yep, Cybok, there he is. Cybok. We're going to talk about him.
And it's just, I think that modern Star Trek that's using Spock is just making as much as they can from his weird way of not telling anyone about his family whatsoever. So, until he absolutely has to. So no one knew about Cybok, no one knew about Michael Burnham, and I knew people who were upset because Michael Burnham was his half-sister, and everyone was like, well, we never heard about this, this is crazy. But Spock doesn't tell anyone anything until he's introducing them. He's like, oh, here's my fiancé, and they're like, what? Here's my half-brother, what?
Oh, yeah, they're my parents. That's the classic moment, right? It's like, hey, Spock, we got a few hours, you want to go down and see your parents while they're, and he's like, these are my parents. What? What?
Spock. We're friends.
This jerk is your dad? Yes, doctor. This jerk is my dad. This explains a lot. Oh, such a good episode. Journey to Babel. You just, so good. There's so many good things in there. Tellarites, Andorians. The whole, there's so much, so much in there. But this is, again, not the episode about Journey to Babel.
And Spock family drama.
It is. Which is so much.
We're going to find some more.
One of my very favorite scenes in all of TOS is the moment where Kirk relieves Spock on the bridge after having his been stabbed by a spy. And Spock's like, really? I thought you were going to be out. And he's like, no, you can save your dad with the transfusion. I'll sit in the chair. I'll be fine. And Spock's like, well, all right, I guess. And the moment Spock is in the elevator, Kirk just slumps down and says, get Scotty here. And he's... And then he can't because a ship attacks since Kirk is practically dying in his chair. It's so good. People go, we now know, because we say, how is it that people have never seen other Star Treks and are listening to this podcast? In the Incomparable Member Slack, we have had people say, I've never watched TOS, and I'm watching Strange New Worlds and listening to Vulcan Hello. So I'll say, that's your assignment for this week. Watch Journey to Babel if you have not already. Mm-hmm. And if you wanna follow it up with The Naked Time, because that's got Christine and Spock and is interesting too. So that's your TOS homework. we're not steering you wrong here. We're gonna recommend good episodes.
These are good ones.
Tell you to watch The Empath, run.
Yes, we are lying.
Run away.
Yes. Oh boy, goodness. And Journey to Babel, written by DC Fontana, who was responsible for many of the things that are created all of Star Trek. Really,
didn't
get as much credit at the time, but
if you haven't read the three books about the making with these are the voyages that are about the making of the original series, they're so good. And the thing that you will walk away with is knowing that Gene Kuhn and DC Fontana created most of the things that people love about Star Trek and don't get any credit because everybody just talks about Gene Roddenberry. And Gene Roddenberry, while he did create Star Trek, also was in many ways Star Trek's worst enemy through his bad behavior. So
also true.
Yeah.
And I will say these are the Voyages, great books. But if you are one of those people who haven't seen any original series episodes, do not read Journey, These Are the Voyages, because it will not make any sense to you, so just don't do it.
No, but if you're a longtime fan and you haven't read those books, you should get them, go to the library. Yeah,
immediately. That's your homework. Or whatever, because long-time TOS fans, read those books if you have not.
It's amazing, because you find out things like this director was 3 days over and was never brought back because he didn't. Mm-hmm. And then the next director came in and he shot and he was under time. And they're like, I like how fast you work. You get more episodes. That was how it was in those days. And then then they shoot the alternative factor and they're like, this doesn't make any sense. And they're like, it doesn't matter. We got to shoot it.
It has to go on.
But the main guest star in it didn't show up for work this morning. It's like, I don't know. Find a guy. Put him in another one. True story. That happened.
Yes, it did. Those are great books. And so I don't know about people who aren't me, but when I watch television shows, I am just enjoying the story, ideally, if it's a good television show.
Yeah.
And I don't really think about how that is an artifact, like a thing that was made by people, right? And so reading those books really highlights the fact that, no, these are people's jobs trying to get, and they have deadlines and they need to get this thing done.
Speaking of which, I wanted to mention a theory I have about the production of Strange New Worlds.
Oh, yes. I have heard this theory and I think it's good. So please share.
So in the initial interviews when the show was launching, I think in the Ready Room and elsewhere, one of the things that came up was that some of the stuff in the first episodes of Strange New Worlds was actually shot at the end of the series run, at the end of the first season.
Which is kind of weird.
Which seems weird, right? Like they went back and they decided to make some changes and shoot some stuff late that they used. So that first episode includes stuff from the very beginning and from the very end of shooting of season one. I thought, well, that's weird. Now we've gone four episodes. We've gone a bunch of episodes without seeing any of Hemmer, the chief engineer, including some major scenes in engineering with no Hemmer. But, and you say to yourself, well, that is weird, but Hemmer's appears with no dialogue in a shot at the end of episode one, and then appears in that one scene in episode two or two scenes. And then he's in episode three a little bit. Or episode four, he's in like three-ish episodes. And it leads to my theory, which is, I think maybe Hemmer wasn't cast or wasn't even in it when they started shooting and they inserted him. And the reason I'm saying that is because it seemed fine at the time, but he's been gone for so long that I wonder if actually they didn't bring Hemmer in till late in the season. And so when they did that, they went back and inserted him in because they're like, well, how are we going to explain that now there's a chief engineer? And they're like, no. We're going to tack a couple of days on at the end of production, and we're gonna shoot the scene where Hemmer walks on the ship, and we're gonna shoot that dinner party scene again with this extra thing in it where Spock explains Hemmer to Uhura.
And
we've got like one scene where Hemmer is like in engineering talking to somebody over the communicator, you know, in the transporter room, but he's just doing it on his own. We have like three or four scenes we can do that will integrate him in the show and make it seem like he's been there all along, even though we only added him in episode 7 or episode 8. I guess episode 8. This was episode 7, right? So that's my theory, is that Hemmer's been gone so long that now I'm starting to wonder if maybe Hemmer wasn't in it and they added him later, which is, it's weird, but like, I don't know. I know, like, Uhura's not in this episode. Like, not every character is in every episode. It's fine. They may have even, you know, saved money by signing a bunch of people to be in, like, 8 episodes instead of 10 or whatever, and they move them around and they save a little bit of money. But I suspect given that they're in engineering and the chief engineer character who you introduced is not there, that's my conspiracy theory, is that I wonder if they actually put him in after the fact. And I know that seems weird, and would they shoot that? But I've seen other shows do similar things when they've made some decisions late in the game. The Expanse did that when they wrote out a character. They seem to actually have brought a few actors back during the hiatus and shot a scene and then CGI'd some stuff in order to write a character out, without spoiling that for The Expanse. And so, yeah, anyway, that's something to watch for. But I'm noting Hemmer's continued absence and now starting to wonder if he wasn't there yet. And then they edited things and reshot some things to make him present all along. It's weird. It's weird.
It's just weird. I wonder if they wrote a later episode after they had cast everyone and said, we really need a chief engineer in this episode.
Right? We need a chief engineer. And they're like, mm-hmm. Well, why don't we do that? And or maybe they'd been trying to find a chief engineer and they had not
figured out.
Had yeah. any luck. I don't know exactly what people can go back and they can see. But like Hemmer's been present in only a few scenes, and I'm wondering. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. There are only three episodes left.
I would be surprised if he's not in the next one. But
also, they're not necessarily in order, right? Shot in order. So it's also possible that the one that he's in a lot was shot late in the game and then inserted earlier in the game as part of this kind of like shell game to, you know, where's the Einar? Where is he? I don't know. Something to watch. I like the character, actually. My real complaint is just that he's a great character and he seems to have vanished.
Yeah, he is a great character. Yeah. I don't know. It is a mystery. Maybe all will be revealed in the next episode.
Maybe he was captured by pirates off screen.
Oh, no. Maybe he is a pirate. So he joined them.
Well, he'll need an eye patch. Back.
That's true. Oh, and that's Captain Pike hamming it up with his pirate impersonation.
Talk like a pirate day on the Enterprise Bridge, apparently, right. At the end of this episode.
And just like anyone who talks like a pirate, he finds it highly amusing, and everyone else wants him to stop.
Yep, that's about right. And we should stop, too.